Hello, hello. You're listening to We're Goblins, a show about buzzwords, pop culture, and the internet through the decades with your friendly but hostile neighborhood goblins. This is CIDR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. I'm your host, Hannah, and I'm here with Tasha.
Hello, hello. Welcome back after a small hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
We're here again to contribute to the long-standing tradition of open source language projects over time, and we kind of have a doozy today.
Yeah, doozy is how I would describe it, actually. It is a slippery slope, a word that I will say the more I looked into it, the less I knew what it means. Today we're talking about the controversial word woke and how it has taken on so many meanings and subtexts over the years, and the shift in woke culture from starting from like, oh, someone who's woke or something that's woke is, you know what's up, to you really don't get it. And we're here to find out, or try and find out, what it means or what people think it means.
Yeah, I think we're here to discuss the strange trajectory that it's taken, because it's not often that we have this much evidence of how much a word has changed over the years. Usually it takes a lot longer, and this one I feel like the turnover is really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the span of like, well, not just 10 years because it's an old word,
decades.
But in popular use, I feel like it's changed in the course of 5 years. That seems really short to me.
Totally. Yeah. And it's interesting because I'm just thinking of how this might be like very emblematic of word goblins in the sense of like what we're trying to do, like what is going on with this word and how it's really loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And I have something fun. I went to the Holy Grail www, which is Wikipedia.
Of course.
And I actually was able to find a timeline for the term woke and how it has come about in popular usage.
Oh, Wikipedia, the like daddy of all knowledge that I'm never allowed to source in academic papers. But we all know that you perused.
Absolutely.
The wiki. We know you used it. You just can't say you used it. So
don't pretend that you're better than
Wikipedia.
Come on.
But that's a great thing to find, because I would love like a visualization of how a word has changed and morphed over time, I think is really helpful.
Yeah.
Understanding social attitudes and contexts and whatnot.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because as you said, in the past 5 years, it has really transformed and there have been ebbs and flows, but the word actually is a bit historic, if you want to call it that. It's been used since the 20th century, even before, who knows. But what I found when people have tried to trace back the usage and the etymology of the word. So first of all, woke is a word from AAVE, which is African American Vernacular English, and it means to be vigilant, literally woke, and then to be alert to racial prejudice and discrimination. That's how it was used initially. And the racial prejudice is the key part. So one of the early uses of the word, it was found in 1923 when a Jamaican philosopher and social activist, Marcus Garvey, wrote in 1923, "Wake up, Ethiopia, wake up, Africa." So just the term, which was wake, and also used interchangeably with woke. And in 1938, which is, I'd say, the most popular old or like one of the first uses of the word woke was by Lead Belly, the blues folk singer, who used the phrase "stay woke" when he was talking about his song Scottsboro Boys, and he did a little spoken afterward after the recording to basically talk about the song and what he was trying to say. So the song was actually to tell the story of 9 black teenagers who were falsely accused of raping 2 white women in Alabama. And Lead Belly actually was talking about the song. And he says he met with the defendant's lawyer and he told them, "I advise everybody, be a little careful when they go along through here. Best stay woke, keep their eyes open." And you can tell that there is a lot of warning mm-hmm. in his messaging, and sort of like, hey, you're a young black man and you will be a target of racism, so you need to be aware of racially motivated threats and potential dangers. And I think that's sort of how we came to know it in like 2010s, or not so much early aughts, at least not in my memory, but like 2010s and 2012 and 2014. And then I think this is maybe a bit dry, but I am a history nerd. So.
We need to know the backstory before we can start painting over it.
Thank you. And then Oxford Dictionary did their own little sleuthing, and they found that one of the early uses of woke was in this New York Times Magazine article in the 60s, and it was by a novelist called William Melvin Kelly, and the title was "If You're Woke, You Dig It," and William was talking about the appropriation of black slang by white beatniks. I did not know what that is, and apparently it was like some social movement against materialism, and that's where it was also used. And then talking about contemporary usage, so hashtag, and how actually I would definitely say like with social media, it became very mainstream, and from like very like something which mostly black folks use, it became more mainstream and was like more appropriated, even if it was like well-intentioned. So in 2012, I don't know if you remember, but but members of the band Pussy Riot were jailed, and the singer Erykah Badu, she tweeted, "Truth requires no belief, stay woke, watch closely, hashtag free Pussy Riot." So that was the first time it was used in a tweet or on the internet, and it became viral. And then in 2014, and which is recorded as like it was being used by the masses, was during the Ferguson riots and BLM uprisings, and the term hashtag woke gained momentum to bring awareness to police brutality. And there's also a documentary with the same name. It's called Stay Woke, which covered the movement, which I didn't know. And to now, where it's used as a pejorative. It's used to mock folks who are liberal, to mock the left. And at what I was saying earlier, nobody really know what it means, and there is no sort of unity with our understanding of the definition. So I am going to stop my little trip down the memory lane here.
I, number one, learned so much, and thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Number two, it's such a mouthful. What a history this word has had. And in hearing just the accounts of the different core moments of its livelihood, the biggest thing that stands out that's really interesting to me is that in its origins, of course, being from African-American vernacular English, is that it started off as sort of like a covert word that mm-hmm. was not used for everyone to totally understand and feel and be motivated by. And because the black artists that were using it were speaking to black people, they had to do so covertly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the thing that changed it was that it became a call to action,
mm-hmm.
and it became something that like other minority groups and white people used, and it is no longer a secret term. It's no longer something that is just kind of like, if you know, you know. It became, we all know, and we need to use it to rally people. So it has this trajectory of going from like incredibly secret to a call to action.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so fascinating. Something which was more a subtext, and it's like, you get it because it's your lived experience. And for folks who don't get it, it's not, this is not for you to get.
Yeah, here's the other thing. It's used for people to describe their lived experience, right? And the fact that it has been co-opted by the right to be this largely like pejorative term, something to smear the actions for combating systemic racism and identity diversity, it's turned into something that is like aggressive, I suppose. I had something to follow that thought, but it's strange to me that, oh, here we go. It came back to me. Oh my God.
Yay.
It's strange to me that it switched from an I scenario, like to understand yourself and how you're feeling and how you're dealing with the ways in which you may be marginalized, to something that people use to not describe their own experience, to describe the experience of someone else, which I think is a core thing that divides those that are for progressive politics and those that aren't. Is those that aren't tend to use words to describe how other people are feeling, but not themselves. And on the progressive side, we now have a lot of language that is for your experience because your experience is important, right? So it's like, it's like who is using it and to what end? And the fact that so many people are using it not to describe how they're coming into ideas about themselves and their identity in the world, how to understand that, but people are using it instead to just like label others, is the turn that it took. And I liken this a lot to the term for me, like internalized misogyny was never in my lexicon as a kid. And the feeling of being awakened to that when you get older, when I got older and realized that a lot of my actions were because of those struggles, it was an eye-opening moment. And I can only use that term to describe my personal experience of that. Anyone else using it in a way to just describe how other people are feeling will feel shallow to me. If it is used by a man that may not have that experience, like, it feels very useless to not be talking about the person.
No, that is really interesting because I think back to, well, of course, this is very much contained to American politics and the racism and racial segregation at the time, which was predominant in the 30s and 40s and 50s, where the word was first being used as a sort of coded messaging and a sort of like cautionary tale for folks, where I imagine musicians, writers who were Black were few and far in between on the center stage. And so the few that got some space were like, okay, we got to talk to the Black youth, for example, who are being witch hunted, and especially going back to Lead Belly's song and how he talked about the Scottsboro boys and what he's trying to say. But now with the internet, where self-documentation is huge and we all need to label ourselves and talk about how we're feeling and put add meaning to like literally every little experience, we're just like, okay, maybe we don't have to. And so that term has like shifted a lot. I don't know if that makes sense. Because yeah, social media being very democratic and everything. And then also talking about how it's been weaponized by the far right, and it's used to mock any progressive social movements as like, this is historical, or you're being dramatic, or it's not so bad. Because I found this one example, which was actually wild to me. I think one of the first uses of this word by the right was by the Republicans, who used it to pass a law, wait for it, called Stop Woke Act. And guess what this law was about? It was a law that would curtail discussion of racism in schools in Florida. So this was specifically to Florida. We want to limit discussion on racism. We want to eliminate any books by queer and black authors from school. And folks who were backing this law, a lot of folks in the government and vigilantes, they call themselves as woke busters.
Yeah, because they are for silencing people. That makes sense.
Yeah, I kid you not. And that is wild to me. And then I was telling Tasha earlier before the show that Donald Trump called Joe Biden's administration as woke and destroying the country with woke. And I'm like, first of all, Joe Biden isn't woke in the true sense of the word. And if he's woke, then I don't want to be woke. And you don't even go here. So it's wild. Like, you know when you think you're like 10 and you like get a new toy and you're like, I'm so cool. But then the lamest kid who's also a bit of a bully gets that toy, and then people are like, that kid is cool. So you're like, I don't want to be cool anymore.
You know when you start saying a cool word in front of your parents and they start mimicking you, and then you're like, I no longer want to say radical in front of you because you're going to call like French toast in the morning radical. It's not the same. You ruined it.
We're not the same.
We're not the same. Hello.
Very much so. Yeah,
I think, I don't want to spend too much time convincing or trying to make an argument for how the word has been changed, because I think that we're all aware of that. I think the word woke has suffered an extreme illness. Like, it's caught a really bad cold in the last little while. And
that's a very poetic way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a poetic word to begin with. Like,
it is.
I do feel like its greatest strength feels like it's because it comes from a poetic place, so that it can describe so much and it can say so much and encompass a lot without needing to be necessarily didactic. And I think that works for a lot of people, but it also makes it very easy to co-opt. And the far right, who are often really angry at words for some reason and are
so
really
true.
Quick to weaponize
okay,
them because they
them
hate
being,
words.
They hate language.
I know.
Maybe you should not speak.
They have a penchant for being antagonistic about words and then, you know, just using them to no end as a bullying tactic, I guess. So, like, they just don't want to adopt pronouns. They're mad about just any sort of new lexicon. So it makes sense that the whole thing is come to the like the flip of a word, which is sad in a lot of ways, but also like we're really good at words. So we can come up with more.
And yes. Moral of the story.
Yeah.
The show's over. No, I'm kidding. You have to suffer and listen to us more.
I think the antagonism is what infected woke. And it's hard to take something back after it's been used in that way, after it's been weaponized. Because now you sort of have to do this thing where you have to, if someone uses the word woke to describe you or your work, you have to first be like, okay, well, tell me what you mean by woke, and then we can talk. You know, like, what do you mean by that? Because now there's subtext. And whenever there's subtext, a word just is different, you know?
Yeah. No, that was great. You gave me a lot of things that I want to respond to. Well, first of all, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm feeling nostalgic for the word woke because it is a poetic word. It's so visceral. Like, words which we... Okay, I don't know. I'm just thinking about this word because we're talking about words and I think about words all the time.
Perfect for word goblins. Good job.
I was at this comedy show yesterday and this woman who, in her set, she made a joke about how she doesn't like dating men who are smarter than her because she's kind of dumb. And then she was watching she was watching this movie with a dude, and he described it as poignant, and she was like, ew, who uses that word? And so I don't know, like, we're like poignant, like, if you you can tell what it really means until you know what it means. But yeah, like, words like woke, it's like, even if you English is not your first language, it's just so visceral. And then yeah, it's also unfortunately fragile in that way, that it can be tainted, and it has mm-hmm. been. And I also think of bullies in school who don't have good comebacks when you're like making a point. So you know what they do? They mimic
they just
you.
Mimic you.
They literally mimic you with like a nasally voice, and you're like, that is so stupid and such a is that your comeback?
Yeah.
And then you just stop talking.
It's inane. It's
but you stop talking because you get mad.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
That is what it is. It's just mimicry.
Very much so. Because we started using woke for like, think about like the protests, Ferguson protests, and then the BLM uprising. And it was, I mean, obviously it was like it was a tragedy, and it was atrocious, but it was amazing to see so many people mobilize, and then the hashtag stay woke, and then you're just gonna kind of use that to smear whatever folks are doing. It's like, you really lack imagination. Like, come on.
You know what that makes me think of, though? That the origins of the word woke were very individualistic, which served its purpose for a time. And because, like, even in the core of the word woke, it's personal. It's not what you do. It's who you are. You are woke. It's like an embodied thing. But in it being co-opted or kidnapped, it's actually become a collective term. The, you know, people taking it as sort of like a pejorative, a mocking term, turns it into an us versus them scenario, which then makes the word feel collective. It went from being a way in which people would individually describe themselves to now, because it's sort of being thrown at a group, it describes a collective, which is the only good thing that I can pull out of this, is like, I do feel like it's less individualistic when it's being used this way.
That's interesting, because my impression is the exact opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I would argue that the usage of woke was quite collectivist and like community-oriented, where it was very much like messaging to a community, the Black community specifically, in the States living under segregation, to stay woke. And then with the popular usage, it was very much sort of like, I am woke and we're woke. And it was a bit of like, it was a bit of like an echo chamber,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Is how I see it. And now nobody really wants to associate themselves with this word. It's almost like the elephant in the room. And because something that I was actually reading, which was funny, just like, politicians are kind of funny. It's like, you're like babies. But I think last fall, I was reading this piece in CBC, actually, where the conservative leader, I don't know how to pronounce his name, it's very French, Pierre Poilievre, he called Liberal and NDP coalition a radical woke coalition, and he meant it as an insult. And journalists asked both Liberal Party folks and NDP Party folks of how they feel about being defined as woke. And it was interesting that there was the Liberal Party was so hesitant to be attached to that word, and they talked about how I think the one of the ministers from the Liberal Party was like, oh, I don't even know what it means. And like, I don't think I'm woke. I'm just serving Canadians or something. And then
avoiding responsibility, I see.
Yeah, very much so. Or one of the politicians had the best response. They said, oh, I'm not woke. My entire family knows about it. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't know. Sorry, I have no idea where you stand.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? Exactly.
Another and evading responsibilities sentiment.
Totally. And then Jagmeet Singh, when asked about this, said, I don't think Mr. Poilievre even knows what he's saying and what the word means. And he's just throwing words around. And that was his response. So it feels very much like, yeah, like there's like it's just a bomb in the room that like nobody wants to touch.
This is what happens when a word enters the lexicon of people for whom it's not for. They mm-hmm. start using it like in an accusatory way.
Yeah.
Like it was never meant to be for you.
No.
And so it being the bomb in the room that no one wants to touch is like, yeah, because it was not for you and it's probably not about you. But now everyone is just kind of wielding it and it's become a zombie term.
I like that.
It's like woke zombieism.
That, yeah, this is our new movement and most people are not invited. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, any word that goes through that much of a transformation over time or something that has been like just deeply co-opted by conservatives are just going to become zombies to me, like Pepe zombieism, woke zombieism.
That is a really good contrast.
PC culture zombieism,
yeah.
If you will. I would say social justice warrior was never within my personal lexicon to describe myself. I think that was always used in an accusatory way,
yeah.
But like, it has a good heart.
Yeah.
But it is definitely a zombified word, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have feminazis.
Yeah, zombified. That one truly got mm-hmm. zombified. That one got cut in half and just married yeah. to the worst possible thing ever.
Libs.
Yeah. It sucks how we don't exactly have, or maybe I don't know of, a word that is just as like poetic and open as woke. Because we were talking about this earlier and we were like, oh, what do we have? And we both use the word progressive to describe ourselves, our leanings, our stances, etc. And that's fine. It's just fine. I don't think it's beautiful.
No.
It has no style.
There's no poetry.
Who is she? You know?
There's no finesse. It's not visceral.
Yeah. And I think that's also a hard one for people to collect under the banner of. I think woke, because it was poetic, had just a bigger sweep.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive does not really do that, I don't think. I think it may be harder to convince people to use that word about themselves, even though they may hold progressive standpoints.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, it's not it, is what I'm trying to say.
It's not it.
It's not emotional or evocative enough. And I feel like emotion is an important component of this discussion, because woke is kind of emotionalist, which is like it leans into like the personal being political at its core. Like, you are woke. It's so that like emotions are like guiding forces for the currency of politics. Emotions are important. Good policies will lead to people feeling emotionally well, right? So
mm-hmm.
emotionalist is about emotions being important, and there's nothing emotionalist about progressive. I don't like it.
No.
That's a personal opinion, though, and so just issuing that out to the world.
That's a great point. I totally, the personal is political, the hill we're going to die on, me and Tasha at least, and woke just evokes that within you. It's so layered
mm-hmm.
versus progressive. Sure, yeah, like that word I can use to describe myself or people I align with, movements I align with, but it just feels cold and detached.
Yeah, it's like a psycho-serious.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it has to be, otherwise I think it becomes like fodder for the far right to make fun of, because like their politics are very against anything emotionalist,
mm-hmm.
right? It makes it very easy for them to latch on and make fun of, whereas like emotions are at the core of a lot of progressive politics. So I think we need to stand by our emotionalist words, despite the fact that they're probably going to be turned against us, because, like, God, is it easy to make fun of emotions? And people have been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great strategy. It's not a smart strategy. It's just mimicry. But, you know, that's why we end up with social justice warrior.
Yeah, absolutely. So we should take a break.
Yes.
This is a very interesting conversation. Stay tuned, and we will catch you after a short break.
Catch ya. I want you to get comfortable, but not vulnerable, just enough to show your soul. Glued to people that I'll end up dying with. Spare it all to impress them, more than sharing common sense. Oh, don't believe what they say, best believe if it pays. So you say you're in love, so put your money where your mouth is. So put your money where your mouth is. So that's fate, that's life, when you're swimming in the abyss every night. Toss and tarnish in a love sense, fake friends. Don't you worry as the clock spins, I'm here.
The dot connector, the spot corrector. I say I love you, you say whatever. Yeah, it must be the lights downtown, but that sweet love you got me round.
Connector,
fuck having thoughts right now, only her two hands can let me down.
Connector,
I'm finna walk with you, the one that was so much that got me through. Till it, I think of that name I got from you, till it, we do the king shit we about to do. She want a romance, she can put that day job off.
Connector.
My nigga said life starts when you get that bad.
Connector.
Well, maybe that right. I'ma just say something, spend the night. Baby, you get me right. And when you take it, you take my side.
I say I love you, you say whatever. The dot connector, the dot connector, the spot corrector. I say I love you, you say whatever.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
In October of 2022, the Vancouver Adapted Music Society held its flagship event, The Strong Sessions, for the fifth time. All Strong Sessions feature a variety of musicians with disabilities, paired with established local artists and bands. Each month until September this year, VAMS will be releasing the performances from our 2022 show on the Reimagine Radio YouTube channel, where you can also find past Strong Sessions content. To stay up to date with us, subscribe to the channel and drop a like to show some support.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
This is a message from Arscientia, a research cluster here at UBC. Arscientia is a partnership between the Stuart Blusson Quantum Matter Institute, the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and the Morris and Helen Belkin Art Gallery. Arscientia brings together artists and scientists to foster new methods of knowledge exchange that cross the boundaries of art, science, and pedagogy. This spring, Arscientia is hosting artist talks with our current cohort of artists in residence. These talks, hosted at the Blusson QMI, will feature three artists who are currently working closely with the QMI, Physics and Astronomy, and Belkin to create sculptural, graphic, and written works. You can stop by to catch our first talk, which will be happening Tuesday, February 21st at 2 p.m. in room 311 at the Quantum Matter Institute. It'll be hosted by J.G. Mayer, who is a Vancouver-based multidisciplinary artist and media designer who specializes in mixed media, web, and audio. Mayer has been working in the areas of both traditional and digital contemporary art and is a sound designer for various game studios who develop titles for publishers such as Apple, Electronic Arts, Microsoft, and Netflix. As part of his talk, Mayer will present one of his major works called Chroma Chamber, a web-based new media art installation that investigates human expectations of vision and machine algorithms by programmatically collating real-time Google image results to surround the viewer with distilled color of the words they speak. You won't want to miss out on this experience at the intersection of both art and science. And stay tuned for our next two talks, which will be happening on March and April.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to Worried Goblins. It's me, Hannah, and Tasha.
Me, myself, Tasha.
Me, myself, and I.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone to the depths of despair.
We have gone on a journey. We have followed the zombification of the word woke and landed in some murky depths. But first, we played some songs for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hina, what did you play, particularly so I can download it later?
Yeah, so I played 95 Love Me by Kenny Hoopla. And it's a great song that I recently discovered. It's romantic and it's punk. So poetic.
Yeah, I find that particularly poignant. If you've listened to the first half, that's hilarious, obviously, because we were just talking about emotionality and the importance, mm-hmm. the core political importance of emotions and identity. And you just dropped a very emotionally high tenor sounding song.
Yeah.
I followed up with something that... is not as like heart wrenching, but I played "Daddy" by Nourished by Time off of Erotic Probiotic 2 to follow the 2022 Erotic Probiotic 1.
Mm.
I thought that that song was interesting because it is called "Daddy," and I think that word has also taken a nosedive or gone on a journey into some murky depths as well. But B, because the song itself has like these fun little disco chords and it's very like synthy, and it takes this weird sort of like souring turn towards the end where it becomes a little bit more dissonant and moody. And that's what the word woke has kind of done.
Yeah. Back, just one more tidbit about the song that I picked. I particularly was intrigued that there is one lyric in the song that says, "So put your money where your mouth is," and that's sort of very much related to this discussion about woke, where at least in left circles and among progressive folks, I suppose, why they started disassociating with that term and distancing themselves was very much like, first of all, yes, it was being used as an incel, but so is everything. And as Tasha said, the right often just hates words and can be contrarians. But also, we were seeing, a lot of, native gestures under the banner of woke,
yeah,
or a lot of virtue signaling. And so, that kind of, parallel, I think is interesting. And when I talk about virtue signaling, I immediately think of woke washing and corporations being woke AF.
Yeah, I think the thing that we didn't touch on before was that the word woke has has also become quite corporate. It's become a bit of a brand. And I think that stems from the fact that this is a word that is about poeticism and symbolism, but mostly embodiment. It's about like who you are and what you stand for. It's woke is a thing that you can be, right? Which makes it perfect for like Lululemon to put it on a bag,
yep,
you know, because they want to sell you things that you are like, oh, I do that.
Yep.
So that's a Vine.
Hashtag, hashtag relatable.
Yeah, exactly. It's for it me moments. That's what branding is. Branding is just all about it me. And so it became this moment where every company everywhere, roll my eyes a million times, was professing how woke they were, mm-hmm. how much in support of various movements they were, whether or not they were doing anything to actively contribute to it beyond just being sort of like another stake in the fight, like another person on the right side. Like, I think that's not something we should discount, but I certainly roll my eyes at a lot of it, especially like, I know, in the early days of the Me Too movement, the like pinkwashing of everything, mm-hmm. how every company was suddenly feminist, therefore deserving of my money. Everything from like the silliness of like Gillette razors, you know, like not exactly doing the world a good, my dude, but like.
Don't bring your butter knife to the fight. Yeah. I just wanted to say that.
It is fun to say that. Oh, I'm going to copy and paste that in my everyday life. Yeah, yes, I think corporations really contributed to the zombification of the word woke as much as the right co-opting it and doing their sort of mimicry thing that they do. But certainly a lot of the packaging of wokeness as a brand, mm-hmm. in which you can just buy into, contributed to it becoming incredibly ill over time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And something that we talked about in the first segment on our episode today is how the term woke really expanded and grew over time and caught on sort of under the banner of woke. It was very much about racial prejudice and waking up to that and being alert, but then it encompasses other injustices. It encompasses sexism and homophobia and those kind of things. But then with that, when something becomes broader and applies to any different kind of minorities, religious minorities, racial minorities, gender minorities, that kind of stuff, corporations love to jump on the bandwagon. And so something that I want to share, a few weeks ago I was passing by a Lululemon store and they had a sign. Also, they really need to, okay, I'm really curious who their comms person is because they're really, really bad at their job. So it said, progress never stops. Pride is for everyone.
Hashtag hustle.
Hashtag confusion. My God. Explain yourself. Not even mad right now. I'm just like, explain yourself. I was like, what? Like, you know that like question mark meme? Mm-hmm. That was me. I was like, what? First of all, pride is not for everyone. Okay, why does everything need to be for everyone? Here's my question.
It's fundamentally not. There are so many things in this world that you can't experience, like, you know?
Get over it. Yeah. Stop trying to be part of everything.
Well, it's in a lot of corporate's best interest to blanket things, to make it for everyone, because then they can sell more. So it's like that capitalist desire to just have your product be for everyone, but then taking on like social movements is just like, it's not going to be for everyone. Certainly we can be in support of things, but I can't say that a lot of stuff is to speak to my exact experience. Yeah. So it's icky. It's just icky.
It's icky. Cringe.
Yeah.
Horrors of late stage capitalism.
Cut it out. Okay. You're not fooling anyone.
Also explain yourself.
Also explain. Yeah. But I mean, like, are we going to put any of our trust in Lululemon?
No. But I would like to see them try. Yeah. A little bit.
There are probably good people working for them. Like,
yes.
Who gives an F about
Chip Wilson?
Chip Wilson.
And how he feels about fat women.
Which we know that he has not good thoughts or feelings about literally anything.
No.
But I'm sure there are good people working for them that, you know, are trying their best.
Would feel embarrassed.
I don't know.
By the
sign. And probably feel embarrassed by that.
Yeah.
But it's like, corporate entities can't take care of you.
So, your job won't love you. Back.
It's true. It's the weirdest relationship you'll ever enter into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel appreciated by your job?
You know, something I read, and this is such a digression.
Let's hear it.
I am so sorry, but I just have to draw parallels, because what we're talking about when you said weirdest relationship you'll enter and talking about corporations, and we always see this hierarchy, right? Where, like, yeah, maybe 20-year-old Hannah, who was on her high horse, did hate Amazon and was like, why would anybody work for it? But hey, no ethical consumption under capitalism. I get it. People need jobs. You're working for Amazon. You're not the problem. Amazon is the problem. Jeff Bezos is the problem. And so I think about like Lululemon, what you said. Yeah, sure. You work at Lululemon. You need a job. Not the problem. But I read that most folks experiencing mental health issues or struggles are caused not by their significant partners, but by their bosses, by their employers.
Interesting.
So I just thought that's interesting and relates to late-stage capitalism, which we love to hate.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think another core element of this show just in general is like, I don't know who said this, but I've been saying it a lot lately and I need to figure out who is responsible. But tools, not targets. Like, we can talk about targets all day long, like the people that are not doing it right, like that Lululemon is not doing it right, that their claims are bogus. And it's true, but there's like structural underpinnings to everything. And it's sometimes fun but kind of useless to just focus on the targets and not the things at hand that are making that happen. And so, like, you're right. I mean, like, capitalism is not here to like comfort you.
No,
it's definitely here to isolate you. And you're meant to treat your job like one of the greatest relationships you'll ever enter into, that you prepare your entire life for, like, it's so romantic.
Yeah.
And then you get into them, and then you have these relations with your boss and your coworker, and they are relationships, and it is not a healthy one because you're sacrificing your time. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a huge digression, but it also makes sense that we have a term like woke not be so like diligent and practical, and have it be sort of a poetic term, to be the like the opposite of this idea of things need to be like really structured and regimented and
hustle and grind culture.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I do. I think there are some threads to pull from there, and sort of, yeah, that's really interesting. Tools, not targets. And now I need to know. Who said it?
I do. Yeah. Can't and, provide that information. It's just been living in my brain. And I'm like,
and
someone water these crops. They're dying.
Did I lose my train of thought? Yes, I did. So just going back to Lululemon signage and yeah, pink washing, rainbow capitalism, right? Like, it is Pride Month. And boy, do we see it around everywhere. We do. And I don't know. I just don't really care anymore. And yeah, as you said, Tasha, Target is not here to comfort you.
No.
But they will sell you self-care products. So, yeah, it's just sort of the lines being slow blurred, and often we can be fooled into thinking slash expecting, especially I think of more as like, I mean, I don't know, I guess, I don't know if Lululemon is like a luxury brand, but it's definitely expensive. And so it often becomes like a lifestyle and a brand that you support, and then you want them to be doing good, and you get, I don't know, I guess you would feel like, oh, at least you're not like buying from a brand that's sus. But I wonder how far can that really go?
Yeah, not terribly far. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of like thinking that you could buy something to make yourself happier and it doesn't work. You're like, if, you know, if I just finally buy this like pastel pink frying pan for my kitchen, my beautiful photographic domestic lifestyle. Everything will be better. And then it doesn't.
Treats work, though. Treats make
treats do work. Yeah, I'm in support of treats. Treats always work. I also am really curious about the core fundamental things that contribute to a word changing over time. Mm-hmm. Like how Hina illustrated in the early half of this episode the history from the 20s usage of wake and woke to its sort of popularized usage to its current usage, which is a pejorative slash kind of sarcastic, kind mm-hmm. of antagonistic, kind of accusatory.
Yeah.
I would say also people who are woke, who have used the term woke, use it towards each other as a sort of cheeky way to reference being a bit performative. But I think things that contribute to a word changing over time are style, what it connotes, and attitude, how it's said or who mm-hmm. is saying it, which in this case, corporate entities and conservatives, corporates yeah. and conservatives, the two C's, and then context, mm-hmm. how where it's being said, where it's being used the most. And like you said, online, it sort of exploded its early uses on Twitter and Instagram. Made it for everyone when it is not for everyone. It was never for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're probably going to see this happen to a lot of our other terms. So just frickin' hold on, I guess.
Yeah.
But if there's anything we're good at words.
And sleuthing.
Yeah. And sleuthing. And adapting.
Mm-hmm. We'll find another word. God damn it.
We will. There's a lot out there.
Yeah. No, that was great, Tasha. I think my last thought before we wrap up this episode is that, yeah, language that is devoid of meaning, unfortunately, doesn't serve the purpose anymore. Mm-hmm. And we just got to stop using it. If a word makes your messaging more confusing, it's not constructive. And that's the opposite of communication.
Yeah.
And we just gotta move on instead of trying to save the word woke and trying to ask people if they identify as woke or not, because this word is a slippery slope, and we are going to get lost into the nitty-gritty, and that's really not the point.
Yeah. No more subtext.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, this was fun. Catch you all next week, same time.
Thanks for listening.